it auto-corrected. It says, yes, today we have Chad Snatchers.
That's a first. I haven't heard that one. I've okay. also heard Smuckers.
You're just sweet like jelly.
Ew, exactly. Goodbye.
Welcome, everybody, to our newest episode of And Here's Why, with myself, Paige.
And Lauren.
We're a podcast where thoughts and feelings can be poured out about books, movies, and TV shows that get you in the feels.
We'll be tackling one topic per episode, and typically with, but not limited to, guests joining us as well.
This episode, we have a special guest joining us.
Today, we have Chad Smathers, who is a creator, but under that umbrella includes actor, writer, director, producer. He's done it all.
Welcome, Chad, and please tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
Hey, everybody. Yeah, thanks for having me on. So my name is Chad, and I am actually from a small town called Boring, Oregon. It is a real place. It's spelt like boring. It was discovered by a mailman. His name is H.W. Boring. And I just love the irony and the sense of humor he must have had to say, oh, yeah, this is my spot. This is my land. And naming a town after him. So that's where I'm from. I'm in the entertainment industry. So I recognize that irony as well. And I moved down here to LA from Oregon when I was 14 to pursue acting. Did that for probably about 12 years. And then now I'm doing filmmaking. So there you go.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Chad has chosen to discuss the 2004 film Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yes.
Wow. What a ride.
What a title.
Right?
I had never heard of this movie at all before you had recommended it, said that you wanted to do that one. And right away, I mean, Jim Carrey, Kate Winslet, I was sold.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't know, like, how many bigger names are actually in this film. It was crazy to see, like, young Mark Ruffalo.
Mm-hmm. Elijah Frodo, Wood.
Yeah, Frodo Baggins.
I know.
What made you decide on choosing that movie? Why does it stand out to you so much?
Yeah, so it's honestly one of my favorite films of all time. I definitely put it in my top five. And specifically, the first time I saw it, because, you know, as you said, it came out in 2004. The first time I watched it was 2010, and I had just gone through a very rough breakup.
Aww.
And so I think I was like, I don't know, I was just kind of in the mood to watch, you know, something in relation to breakups and heartbreak and whatever. So I was just kind of scouring the internet, as one does after a breakup. And I was like, okay, well, like, what kind of films, you know, could kind of satisfy this itch or whatever. And this was like one of the top ones that came up. And as you did, Lauren, I was like, oh, Jim Carrey, Kate Winslet, sign me up. So I honestly had no idea what to expect going into it. And then I just remember getting to the end of it, and I just took this like giant sigh, and I was like, that is one of the most beautiful movies I've ever seen. And I've probably seen it like four or five times since then. And so it's one of those movies that I definitely recommend to anybody, but specifically like filmmakers and artists, because I feel like it really just captures everything that I love about cinema.
And it tells quite the story. So, I mean,
oh yeah,
definitely. I didn't read the summary or anything of the movie.
And
yeah, as we're watching it, I forget, it's in the beginning, something happens. Oh, how she seems like so obsessive.
Uh-huh.
They go up to her house and she's like, I'm going to go get my toothbrush. I was like,
yeah.
Little psycho.
What's going on?
Lauren was like, you didn't read the synopsis or whatever, clearly, because no. And she explained it. I was like, oh.
I kind of like that, though. I like when people just watch movies without like a synopsis. I think that's actually, I think that's the way it should be. Because I feel like nowadays, especially with trailers, like there's just too much that's given away, you know?
Absolutely.
I don't know. I had these weird points of like going in and out of liking this movie.
Sure.
It was super confusing from the start. It's just kind of forced upon you, I guess. Like you're just thrown into this thing. But once you kind of get the hang of, I guess, the rhythm of the movie, because it definitely has a specific rhythm.
For sure.
I literally felt like I was put on some sort of acid trip. In the beginning, that's when you take the acid. And then the whole like middle, you're like, wow, this is a ride. Psychedelic type craziness, the sci-fi,
yeah,
blurred faces. And
oh, I did not like that gave me like
Jim Carrey's weird adult baby moment. I was like, what is going on?
Yeah.
Kind of almost heartbreak at the very end. You feel like you're crashing from that whole LSD trip.
Yeah, it's a wild ride for sure.
And just to be fair, Lauren does not do drugs. She was just giving you, you know, like the full like effect, like what you would think, you know?
Pugs, not drugs, children.
Nor do I do drugs. And I can also speculate and imagine that's probably what it would be like. It just turns into like a PSA to like not do drugs.
Maybe someone will sponsor us. Dare? Is that still a thing?
Fun fact, I actually did a Drug-Free America PSA commercial when I was 16. I was in a commercial and I lit a car on fire, but that's besides the point.
Whoa. Okay, we're going to need this footage to promote this specific podcast for the Instagram, for sure.
I think I might actually have it, so we'll
Don't do drugs, kids, or you set cars on fire.
I wish it was that blatant. It was definitely just like a very cheesy metaphor for like, hey, this is what drugs can do to you. Like, this is the car that represents. Yeah, it was interesting.
I was reading about this movie and I had a serious issue. Uh-huh. Kate Winslet, she actually dyed her hair all of those colors for the movie. Yeah. And sometimes she would have to switch colors during the same day. And I'm like, that bothers me. Like, I need my stylist at Kiana Pearson to hop on here and tell us why that's tragic. So, yeah, I hated that. I can't imagine what that did to her scalp, but that's not my problem. So,
well, I feel like that's why they kept her roots out of it, because her hair would have actually fallen out.
It would have had to. Like, there's just no, as vibrant as those colors were, I know it's Hollywood, but still, absolutely not.
Because, honey, let me tell you, as someone who has bleached their hair many a time, and I've had hair like Kate Winslet, okay? Like, your girl went through an emo phase. That almost chemically burned my scalp to the point where I thought I was gonna have to shave my head.
Yeah, I feel like given her kind of commitment and like method approach, I feel like she was probably more okay with it than we realize. Like, you know, because I feel like the Clementine character, she is kind of this spontaneous, like extroverted person that would have just like dyed her hair on a whim. So I feel like it kind of lined up.
She was just playing her character.
Yeah.
I also saw a thing and it was like, fun fact, in this movie, all the scenes that were done on the train were shot while the train was actually moving.
Whoa.
Crazy.
Oh, that's, I didn't know, such that. A fun fact.
Did they not need stunt doubles for that?
Right? So dangerous.
Yeah, their legal team must have been incredible.
Oh, yeah.
What a time to be alive, 2004.
I thought I was seeing things, because that one scene when a car just like falls out of the sky.
Yeah.
When Jim Carrey's like walking, things started making a lot more sense when I'm like, okay, everything around him is kind of being destroyed because they're like actively erasing all these memories. Yeah. Once I figured that out, because the car fell and he just kept walking, I'm like, what? Did I?
Right.
Me and Paige were watching it and she didn't say anything. I didn't say anything. And I'm like, are we going to pretend this didn't happen? Because that just definitely happened.
Yeah.
And then I noticed the street signs were going blank, things disappearing. I'm like, okay, this is a thing now.
Oh, I get it. Yeah. I mean, the first time I watched it, I kind of had the same reaction you did. I was like, I don't know if I liked it. I don't know if I did, you know, like it was kind of this like weird reaction. And then the second or third time I watched it, I really kind of developed a deeper appreciation for it. And just, you know, just the filmmaking in general and how they approached even that, you know, like how they went about representing the human psyche and memories and what that would actually look like. To dive into someone's brain as their memories are being taken away from them. I just thought it was so beautifully done.
I feel like without all of the different attributes of like the sci-fi and the effects, I don't know if I would have enjoyed the movie as much as I did if those were taken away.
Yeah.
Take those away and it just becomes this super, much more serious film, honestly, because some of the memory erasing scenes were comedic in odd ways.
Yeah.
Like they weren't out and out funny. You laugh because you're like, this is just so odd. Mm-hmm. But take those away and I feel like it would have been too serious.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, and even the way the music tied in too during those moments, like it was very kind of like quirky score during a lot of those moments. And I feel like you're right. Like if you didn't represent it that way, it just would have been like a super melodramatic just representation of like, oh, these like memories are being erased and this is just like so sad. But it's like, oh, this is a very interesting take on a very intense thing.
No, I definitely enjoyed it. Like, I mean, I'm a psychology major and I found it super fascinating because like, especially like that's how your dreams are, you know, like where you can't see people's faces right. Sometimes or like words are blurred or you can't remember something. I don't know. Like, I thought it was super cool. I thought they did a really good job with it. I was confused a lot in the beginning, but once they got inside his head, everything started making sense. So I didn't know if it was because I was like really into my snack and I wasn't paying that close attention or like if it was just really that confusing. But all in all, I figured it out. So
listen, if you have a really good snack in front of you, I get it. It's hard to focus sometimes.
Honestly, that is the most real thing I think that we've said on this podcast, because if we're watching a movie or I mean, that's really the majority of what we've done so far is movies. And I'm always either eating a pint of ice cream mm-hmm. or a homemade acai bowl. And I know that's not how you say it, but in the South, that's how we say it. So
it's acai.
Okay. That's what I said. Acai. So I'm eating it. And I'm like, dang, this is a good bowl. And then I look up. I'm like, oh, gosh, what happened? I missed something critical. But I figured it out.
It's a fast-paced movie.
It was.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's an hour and 48 minutes, which is pretty fast. With the exception of the beginning, this film is just one giant montage. Like you're essentially just being pulled through his brain and the memories, you know, from like the most recent to the earliest. And so you're right. It doesn't feel like you're ever really sitting in a scene. It's just kind of like a waking dream where you're just getting these mm-hmm. little snippets of moments. But it is kind of like a compilation. Like, I feel like once you get to the end, you're like, oh, okay. Like, I kind of understand their relationship, but there's not really one specific moment where you're like, oh, this is how it was. You know what I mean?
It kind of reminded me of Inception, which I know Inception mm-hmm. came out after this, but that's what it reminded me of just since I've seen that. Just a movie where you're like, what the heck is going on?
Yeah. So fun fact about not Inception, but another movie that Christopher Nolan made, which is Memento, which is about, you know, memories and that whole world. It was actually right around the same time that Memento came out that Charlie Kaufman, the writer of Eternal Sunshine, was developing this movie. And so there was actually a moment where he, in the development process, he was actually considering stopping writing because he saw Memento came out. And I believe it was the producer who was the one that said, no, like, you got to keep going. You got to keep writing. But yeah, so it's interesting you bring up Nolan because that was actually a very real thing that happened like around that time.
And I read too that I guess him and his girlfriend broke up and it was like super hard for him to continue doing this. And like, I think it was the scene where, what's his name? Jolie. He's getting all his stuff together. And I guess that was really hard for the director, whoever it was, to watch because that's what he was going through. I was like, oh, that's sad. Wow. Like, you're making this movie and hoping to make it big. And then that happens to you, you know?
Yeah, that's tough.
Sad times.
Little Jolioli.
Just sounds V country.
Joel,
Little Jolie.
Little Jolie.
Oh, gosh. I kind of struggled with, throughout the whole thing, whether I liked them together or not, because they both kind of seemed damaged in mm-hmm. different ways. I don't know if this is good for you guys to be together. Like, you both need different things. I don't know if it's a good idea for you guys to stay together and be this damaged as a team. But then I love the idea that even after wiped memories, they find themselves back. There's obviously a reason why this is a romance titled as like a sci-fi romance, but mm-hmm. I don't know. There was still something in me that I'm like, is this a good idea? And I like how they admit that in the film. They're like, we're gonna fight. We're gonna probably get bored of each other, but let's do this. And there's something beautiful about that where, I mean, I personally have definitely been with someone and I'm like, gosh, this is not going to work in the long haul, but it could be fun before it ends. So let's do this.
Who hasn't? Yeah. And Yeah, that scene in the hallway at the end is just like gut-wrenching to me, because where they're like, you know, they had just listened to the audio tapes of them basically listing every single thing that they hated about the other person. And then, you know, she leaves, and then there's just that moment of tension, and then he goes after her, and it's like, you know, they, like you said, they both face the facts of, okay, like, we literally just heard everything why this didn't work. And yet, okay, like, they literally, like, the script is so simple at that moment. They just keep saying okay to each other, and they just start like crying. And I'm just like, whoa, like, like that part gets me every time, especially with the music during that part too. I'm just like, dang, like, that's powerful.
And that's finally a scene where I felt like I could take a breath, because everything leading up to that was so, he's running in through different memories, trying to take Clem with him and trying to make sure he doesn't forget. And it's like, he's literally just sprinting throughout his mind. And I'm like, you're panting heavily with him, because you're like, taking on this freaking ride. And then finally that scene, you're like, all right, this is supposed to be his present tense. He's awake. Mm-hmm. They know what's going on now. Like, they got the tapes back, and it was breathing heavy, I'm emotional type situation.
Well, and I love that at the end that she sent all the tapes back. What was her name? Mary? Was that her name in the movie?
Mary.
The assistant? Yeah. And because I'm like, memories aren't meant to be erased, you know, or like files to be deleted. I think that they help shape us into who we're supposed to be. Like, that's how we grow. It's how we learn. So even though we go through hard stuff and life's not always easy, I think that memories are what shape us. So I like that she did the right thing and gave everyone their memories back.
But how relatable of a concept is that, though? And, you know, obviously they like actually, you know, manifest it into a whole film. But just the whole idea of, you know, going through a heartbreak, and then on the other side of that, you're like, gosh, like, I wish I had never met that person, or, you know, I wish this memory didn't exist, because it's just too painful. And so I agree. I think, you know, inevitably we have to wrestle with the good and the bad, you know, when you're dealing with that. But it is so fascinating to think about a hypothetical world where you just like erase those. But I think, to your point, it's like the good and the bad, they do inform who you are as a person, and that's how you grow, and that's how you move forward in life, and, you know, hopefully learn from your mistakes from the last one.
Chad, you are far from the last person that has had that drama queen, I wish I never met you moment. I feel like if this were real life, I would totally be that dumb person to make a rash decision where I'm like, oh my God, this person screwed me over. I want nothing more than to forget you. Then I would go through the procedure like a dummy. And then... had I waited a day, maybe a couple hours, I would have been not fine, but I would have been like, wow, I'm overreacting as per usual. But, you know, the only reason why I think I would take that procedure would be I was the lady in the waiting room with all the dog stuff.
Oh, yeah, that was so sad.
That is me. Like, screw people. I can get over if you break my heart eventually, but let me forget this dog that I've loved for the past 11 years, because that's just too much.
For real.
That's so true.
That's a different level of hurt.
Could you imagine, like, okay, so I read for the movie that it was originally supposed to be Nicolas Cage in the leading role.
What?
Yeah, that's who they had in mind writing the script. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I've seen him in a lot of different stuff and, like, genres and stuff. I just don't know if I could see him in that movie.
So what's interesting about that is Charlie Kaufman, the writer of Eternal Sunshine, he wrote a movie called Adaptation. I believe it came out in like 2001 or 2002. And Nicolas Cage was the lead in that, and he won Best Actor for it. So,
really?
Yeah. So there was already kind of like, you know, a little bit of a team there. But I didn't know he was considering him for Eternal. That would have been a totally different film.
I would just picture Nicolas Cage sitting down in front of Dr. Howard. Isn't that his name?
Yeah.
Yes.
In front of Dr. Howard and being like, I stole the Declaration of Independence and
ew!
I need to forget it. I need to forget it.
Yeah. It would literally just be National Treasure, like Memories Edition. Like it would just be him chasing after his own memories,
like,
instead of the
Declaration
of Independence.
Why does Nicolas Cage talk like President Trump? Because that's what that just sounded like.
You know, he kind of does. He kind of does.
He does. He does. He talks
just a raspy, like, serious.
Yeah.
Tortured.
In every scene, he talks like he is saying one of the most important lines of the film, but like every line. And I feel like that's so Trump energy, where he's just like, I'm talking, you're going to listen to me.
Yeah.
Everything is important.
Just everything is so important.
I have to go get some milk from the fridge. It's like, oh, okay, you're just getting milk from the fridge. This just became very, very intense.
Yeah, we're pretty dramatic.
Yeah, it's entertaining.
We do have a hoot and a holler of a good time, I'll tell you that much.
It's a hoot and a half.
It's all you can ask for in life.
Paige has me saying all these crazy, like, Southern things all the time now. As a Northerner, never have I been like, no ma'am. But now, I say weird things like that.
I don't know. Lauren just surprises me. Like, she is from up north. We actually took a road trip to Nashville to go see the Jonas Brothers back in the fall. And I had the aux because I was driving. I forget which playlist I was listening to. Lauren was like, oh, can I play some of my songs? I was like, yeah, sure. Pass her the aux. Plugs it in. She's like on some country. I don't know what was happening. She was listening to all these old Rascal Flatts songs and old Shania Twain. I'm like, who are you? Like, don't ever tell me you're from Illinois again. Like, absolutely not.
It's my country playlist on Spotify. I named it Dang Flabbit.
Dang Flabbit. That's good.
Do you have a country playlist, Chad? Are you into country music at all?
I'm not, and I know I'm gonna divide, you know, the whole audience.
No, it's
there.
Fine. It's fine. You are entitled to your own musical stylings. That is fine.
I mean, I love like Chris Stapleton. Does that count?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Huge fan. Yeah. Huge fan. I love him.
If anyone's looking for a good country playlist on Spotify, mine is titled Yee Yee Skeeter, so you can check that out. If you want some good country bops.
Hey, these are some flavorful titles. I love it.
Thank you so much. Yes. Even with some of the background characters, I forget what Mark Ruffalo's character's name is.
Little nerd guy.
Stan.
Stan and Patrick, both of their characters were sort of in the background for me, but what made them so relevant was the whole scene where Mary is confronted with this, oh my gosh, I've had the procedure done to me. That just totally blew my mind. And then her final decision of being like, screw this, I'm sending all of these tapes back. That's just her like mic drop on this movie. And I thought that was phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it changes the whole like trajectory of the film. Because I think, and it's interesting that it's like towards the end as well. You know, once it happens, then they receive the tapes, like Joel and Clementine receive the tapes. And I feel like that decision at the end where they choose to make another go at it, it wouldn't have been as powerful and as meaningful if they didn't hear the tapes and didn't hear all the junk. Because that's real life, you know? It's like when you get into a relationship with someone and the deeper you go and the closer you become, it's like you're obviously going to see their flaws. You're going to see their junk. You're going to see their past. Mm-hmm. And so that's real life. That's just how life is. But it's like in this situation, they're kind of faced with it, quote unquote, at the beginning because, you know, they've already had their memories wiped. Yeah, it makes that decision so much more powerful. And I think, you know, Mary plays obviously a huge part in that. And she realizes, you know, how messed up this whole thing is.
Do we all hate Patrick? Because I hated Patrick.
100%.
Yeah, I hated his hair also.
Patrick's hair is the worst.
It was tragic. Granted, it was 2004 and probably all the trends we could say we hate, but like, What are those called? I always call them the wrong thing.
What?
Is it lamb chops?
Oh, the mutton chops.
Yeah.
The lamb chops.
You know, the pork chops? Yeah, those. Hated it.
And he just came off Lord of the Rings, so he was probably like, all right, like I want to be totally different than Frodo. So he's probably just
he's like shave my head, but also do it bad. I wish he would have just taken the ring and disappeared, because yikes. Just that part where he took the panties just literally made me like, yeah. I got goosebumps, and not in a good way. I'm like,
oh,
ugh.
So weird.
Institutionalize him.
That made me so uncomfortable. I refuse to comment on it. That's how I feel about it.
And then he was like stealing all of Joel's like tactics and stuff. I was like, yeah. Dude, you can't even come up with like, an original thing.
Yeah, like stealing the necklace. She's like, oh, I've never got a gift, or no one's ever had like my taste or something. I don't know, like that. I was like, yeah, that should tell you something.
Well, yeah, she's like, oh, what is it? He's like, I don't know. Open it. I'm like, yeah, you really don't freaking know, do you, Patrick? Little patty cakes. Oh.
No, he doesn't get the nickname Patty Cakes. Only Patrick's that we like get that nickname.
Loved Mark Ruffalo's. Yeah, it's fine that you cheated on me with, you know, this old man, Dr. Howard. Not once, but, well, they weren't together, I guess, the first time she had gotten with him. But just the fact that he's like, yeah, yeah, it's fine. I still like you. I'm like,
No.
Do we still like her?
We don't settle.
Yeah. Do we still like her? I mean, I respect her, you know, freaking out and whatever about knowing now that she had the procedure, giving everyone their tapes back. Mad respect, but Stan deserves better than that. So
much better.
Not that he's like the best worker on the block, because, you know, getting high on the job.
Yeah, it's a little suspect.
Literally sleeping with his girlfriend, like in the same bed as, you know, an unconscious patient. Kind of weird and unethical in many ways, but Stan deserves better.
I feel
better.
Like you just described like a Netflix documentary right there. Like a true crime Netflix documentary that like came out like during this quarantine. Like that's now that you're talking about him, I'm like, okay, maybe Stan isn't necessarily the best guy.
Just their whole practice, I think. Like, all of them.
It's sketchy. Coming into someone's home when they're asleep. Ew. Yeah. No. And then, like, eating their food, drinking their drinks. Like, no. That's so...
That was making me so mad. I'm like, I signed off for you to erase my brain of Miss Clementine. I did not sign off on you drinking my whiskey. And stealing my snackos.
Yeah.
That's not okay with
me. Like, honestly, nothing makes me more mad than when people eat my snacks. Like, unless I offer it to you, don't touch it. Like, I am so possessive over food.
This is true.
Specifically snacks.
Well, you're one to talk. Lauren had, like, 5 cookies the other night and didn't even offer any of us one. She's like, there's only 5. Eats all of them.
There was only 5.
What kind of cookies were they? Because I'm a cookie connoisseur, so it makes a difference.
Oh, gosh. They were the Pillsbury ones, right?
Yep, they were Pillsbury, and they were chocolate chip, and they were fantastic. And most notably, they were mine. They were mine.
Okay, so. Literally, my husband and I, we brought this huge tub of cheese balls over because we were all hanging out and to share. And then Lauren's like in the corner, like eating her cookies, not sharing. I was like, you're such a brat. We literally brought snacks and you won't give me a cookie.
I'm not offering my snack, so I'm not going to eat hers. So I stuck with my cookies. You can check my digestive tract.
Ew.
I did not eat one. Nope. I did not eat one cheese ball, and I will swear to that.
We will just take your word for that one.
Truly the golden rule of snacks. I don't touch yours. You don't touch mine. This is how it's going to be.
And that's what I did. I'm like, she can't complain if I didn't eat any of her cheese balls. Did Ryan have some of her cheese balls?
Oh, yes,
but he didn't have cookies to offer, so.
He ate all his allotted cookies. He didn't have any left.
Yeah, you know what? A night, I'm only allotted 12, so let me have my 5.
Ooh, psycho.
I eat too many cookies.
There's no such thing. There's no such thing.
My body tells me, yes, that there is a limit, indeed. Do I follow said limit? I push the envelope. We'll put it that way. One day I'm like, oh, well, yesterday I only had like 3, so today I can have 15. That math checks out.
But to be fair, she really doesn't eat anything else. She has spicy ramen and cookies, so.
Well, at least you're consistent.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all that matters.
Consistency's key.
We used to work out a lot, actually, together and stuff. Don't really do that anymore. She eats ramen and cookies. You'd never know. You would have absolutely no idea.
I should be 300 pounds, but
you
I'm
should.
Not,
yeah. So. I'm like, your metabolism's insane.
I've trained old Precious well. Anyways, back to the turtle subject.
Wait, this isn't a podcast about food? I thought we were.
I wish it was. We need to make a separate podcast for food because Paige has many a recommendation.
Well, sign me up.
I'm like, don't get me started.
I'm trying to decide in the reels right now, real time, who my favorite character was. But I can't do it because I feel like, Paige, I just heard a pen click.
I'm not touching my pen, I swear.
That was actually my mouse, and I do apologize.
I'm like, I swear my pen's not anywhere close.
I'm kidding.
Oh, wait, ready?
I'm a head out.
I'm done.
I like certain characters for different reasons, but I'm not fully in love with just one character, if that makes sense.
That makes total sense.
Chad, do you just have someone that you're like, nope, I am team insert name here?
No, because I don't feel like it was like a Twilight situation where it's like, oh, you know, clearly where this is a team Jacob.
Are you team Jacob though?
I'm a team, it's Edward, right? Team Edward?
Yep.
Oh.
Robbie
yeah,
Pats?
I'm a team Edward.
That's Robbie disappointing. Pats. Okay, Robbie continue.
Sorry. Yeah, so I wouldn't say there's like one specific person I'm like, oh, for sure, because they're all kind of deeply flawed in their own way.
Oh, yeah.
But Joel, I think I can relate to Joel more than any other character.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little bit more introverted. You know, I think at that time in my life when I watched it for the first time, like I was definitely more insecure, and he's obviously, you know, kind of deals with that. And so I don't know. There's just like some aspects to his like actual personality that I connect with. I know I keep going back to it, but I just love that moment in the hallway where he makes the choice that is kind of out of character, if you think about it, of him, you know, being bold and like taking a chance and actually like going after her, you know, because in that moment, he could have just, the movie could have just ended there. And it's like, okay, I'm not going to try to talk to her again or like whatever. Like mm-hmm. they could have just gone their separate ways. But that moment for me was like, okay, this guy, you know, despite everything, he still chooses to like go after her, which I thought was cool.
Right. And I feel like the more I talk about this movie, the more I get a greater, deeper appreciation for it. Because it is a film where it makes you think. To see it again, I would have to wait a little bit. It's not a movie that I can just constantly have on in the background. So,
yeah. Agreed. It's not like Avengers or something.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes. Just like Avengers.
I don't think I'd watch it again because, I mean, I don't know, being like married and stuff now, that's obviously like not something I'm going through, and Lord willing, I won't go through. So I'm like, I feel like I can't relate to it at this point in life. But I mean, overall, like I thought it was very cool and it definitely made you think and stuff. I don't think I'd watch it again just because I got it, you know?
Yeah, that's fair enough. Respect the pouch, respect it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, it kind of, is through a filmmaking lens. Like, I, you know, as you said, I wouldn't necessarily just like put this on just for funsies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like one of those like Napoleon Dynamite type movies where it's like, oh, right. Like I can watch this, you know, it's like a feel good movie. It's really, for me, it's like, okay, if I want to study the craft of filmmaking, or if I just want to appreciate really good storytelling and good acting, it's something that I can, even to this day, after, you know, 10 years of after the first time I've seen it, I'm still taking away different things.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do think it's because, well, first of all, we haven't even mentioned this yet, but it won Best Original Screenplay in 2004, which I think is worth mentioning. But I think it's truly one of the best scripts ever written. And I think across like Hollywood, I think, you know, a lot of people would agree. Because you're looking at a film that is taking on a monumental task of balancing a really complicated love story and also world building, you know, because like this isn't real. Like, obviously we don't have this procedure. This isn't a real situation. So it's like, from a script standpoint and also from a filmmaking standpoint and executing on something like this, even as a casual viewer, like I think, given a few months, given some space and time, it's one of those movies that you can genuinely go back to and it'll be a different experience every time.
Well, and that's interesting to have your take on it, because that's clearly, you know, what you're interested in. Like, we're just your average Joes and your average Lauren and Pages. And, you know, like, that's not our expertise. So it's nice to see why you feel the way you do about it. And for anyone for sure. that's interested in the same thing, that would be a good takeaway for them, you know, as a reason to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And someone that's just very visual can appreciate this movie from a visual standpoint. But if they're not into like the deeper message and things like that, then this probably isn't the movie for them. Anyone that's a creator of any sort will definitely be able to find a tidbit even that they're like, wow, that was
perfectly
nice.
Executed. Yeah.
And in 2004, too. I mean, think about that. Like, you know.
I was just thinking that. I'm like, that movie was kind of ahead of its time.
And right. I agree. Because, I mean, obviously the graphics and stuff, like, they were great for that time and all. But I had to keep reminding myself, like, this is an older movie. You know, mm-hmm. like, about 16 years older. And you wouldn't yeah. think that if you had no idea and just sat down and watched it. So that was something that made it very unique.
And it was successful. I actually looked up the budget versus like what it made at the box office. It was made for $20 million, which is a decent amount of money back then. And then still today, but you know, it's more like mid-range now. But yeah, box office, it made $72 million, which definitely would have been like a hit back then.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's interesting that like, you know, yes, it is kind of a heady film and like there are some like deeper themes, but I think there is something at the core that can resonate with a lot of people and heartbreak and wishing, you know, certain things didn't happen and attempting to preserve good memories, but erasing the bad and like, are relationships worth the risk after knowing, you know, the flaws of someone? Like these are all like, you know, timeless themes that I think mm-hmm. films like this, at least in my opinion, films like this will stand the test of time because, you know, that's something that humanity has been dealing with since forever.
When the whole concept was introduced, I was like, oh, heck yes, sign me up. There are so many people I wish I could forget. And then at the end of it, I'm like, oh, no, those memories mean the most. I need to keep them. Like,
right.
Wait, so I have a question. I was just looking up the cast. Rob in the movie, was that the husband to the lady that like they were fighting and stuff that Jolie was hanging out with?
Yeah, David Cross. Yeah, he's in Arrested Development. I love David Cross.
Okay, I just was like, hey, that's the guy from Alvin and the Chipmunks. And I was like, wait, he was in the movie?
He's clearly more known for Alvin and the Chipmunks, so I'm glad you brought that up.
I mean, obviously, Ian was the villain. Like, that's important.
Yeah, yeah. But
I was like, oh, wow, he's been in a lot of things.
The Oscar-winning film, Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Did it really?
Yes.
No, Paige. No.
Oh. I was like, wow.
Best visual effects for animals goes to Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Gosh, oh heck.
Okay, I'm clearly not qualified for this position. I am resigning.
This is my official resignation.
Yes, it's been a good run. 7 episodes in, it has been a good run.
Oh, I'm fired. Do I still get paid for this episode?
No one gets paid. I wish we got paid.
Just gotta get that sponsor.
I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Pillsbury, where are you at?
Pillsbury.
What have we mentioned? We've mentioned the DARE program. Pillsbury.
Pillsbury.
In a previous episode, I discussed Ben and Jerry's.
Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A.
You should just start saying a bunch of them. McDonald's. Best Buy.
Starbucks, give me your
Verizon.
Money.
At Target.
I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on the score briefly, because I think, well, first of all, John Bryan is an amazing composer. He did Lady Bird, Step Brothers, Punch Drunk Love. And I was actually listening to just some of the songs again. Like I went on iTunes and just looked up some of the specific songs.
Mm-hmm.
And the theme of, like, literally it's titled The Theme of the Movie, is just so beautiful. And I didn't realize until like this, you know, most recent watching, I was like, wow, like the theme is really good and it's really like powerful. I don't know if you guys picked up on any of the music while watching it or if it like affected you at all, but I thought the music overall was pretty awesome.
I did not notice the music, I'm gonna be honest.
Well, so it did its job then.
Because you were just feeling the feel.
Great success.
Yeah, I was just so into the movie, I couldn't pay attention to the music. It was irrelevant.
Wait, was that Bruno? Great success.
That's Borat, yeah.
Oh, Borat. Great success. Borat, Bruno, they're essentially hand in hand. They're the all same the same.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Same person. But yeah, the favorite scene. Okay, so I know you kind of called it out and you were like weirded out by it. But I actually really liked the scene with them as kids. Not the one where they're adults, but like literally where they're actually kids and it's aww, their voiceover.
And he's just like, I'm killing thought, you.
Yeah, I just thought it was like, it was so sweet. And it did remind me of like being a kid again. And also like the music cue during that part. I don't know. I thought it was like really, really clever.
Some play suffocation always gets you laughing.
Well, not that part.
I know. I'm kidding.
That was funny though.
You just like, really didn't like that, did you?
That part was actually funny. She's like, "Hey, I'm gonna kill you."
Right.
But the part before it, when he was like freaking hammering the pigeon.
Yeah, movies with any kind of like
animal abuse.
That's what I was gonna say, but I was like, well, it was dead already, but still, like,
it's still pigeon murder.
Well, yeah.
Okay. We don't condone pigeon murder on this podcast.
No. Anyway.
Because who we don't want sponsoring us is PETA, all right? And not the chip.
Because those are amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, we can have PETA chips.
We can have PETA chips. Shout out PETA chips.
I was just going to say, I don't like stuff like that. You know, like in John Wick, where they kill the dog, like you totally lose me. You know, like I will start bawling because I just like, why did we have to bring animals into it? Like, or if it were going to do it, couldn't it be like a worm or something? Or like,
what?
I don't know. Something irrelevant.
That was like a traumatic moment for him, though.
Yeah, I know, but it was traumatic for me.
Oh no, I agree. Like, I'm not saying that's like my favorite scene because there was animal like,
best
abuse.
Scene ever.
I'm saying I liked the intent behind it, which was like, you know, we all have that like inner child in us that needs to be loved and still needs to be like. I'm getting into like psychology and therapy.
That's okay. Now,
but I felt like that scene to me was like, okay, like in relationship, whether it's romantic or not, like we should all have that perspective towards each other, that we should all see each other as like, you know, like there's always that inner child that needs love. You know what I mean?
But can we laugh about how different of a movie or movies the John Wicks would be had it started with killing a worm and he's just like, I'm going to kill all these people. You killed my worm.
Yeah, you don't have a franchise if that's the case.
Well, him getting vengeance made the movies totally worth it. But my dad felt so bad because we were watching it together and I was bawling on the couch. And he's like, I'm so sorry that
Did you see him kill that earthworm? That was his favorite earthworm.
It was devastating.
He was just a baby.
You go kill all those people, John. I can't believe that.
That's it. I'm rewriting John Wick, but with an earthworm. And it's going to be a parody, like Vampires Suck, and it's going to do awful, but I'm going to make it.
Nicolas Cage has to play.
Ew.
Oh my god.
Recasting.
Yes.
I want an honorable mention because that was basically my idea.
Paige, you can play the earthworm.
Oh, okay. So I get whacked with a mallet. Love that for me.
But the whole franchise is about you and seeking justice for you.
That's also beautiful.
My favorite scene, I think, was when they break into that house and it's in the memory and they start talking about, like, I think Kate Winslet's the one that's like, well, what if you don't leave this time? Maybe just effect-wise, even just so beautiful how, like, the whole house is just like coming down and they still manage to only notice each other.
It's kind of, because it is towards the end. And so you're kind of feeling this sense of impending doom in a way, but also, like, as you said, they're focused on each other. They're not really paying attention to the destruction and craziness that's happening around them.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, it really is a beautiful, beautiful metaphor.
A favorite scene. The credits. No, I'm kidding. Totally kidding.
Whoa. I'm going to resign. I'm officially putting in my resignation.
I don't know. My favorite scene was probably at the beginning, like just their whole ordeal of meeting, like how he goes to the train station and like them being awkward with one another, like how he's stepping forward, she's stepping back, and like they keep making eye contact, just because I feel like it's so awkward. And that's how it is when you first meet someone, like the nerves, but like you're attracted to them. And I thought it was cute. So
yeah, it's adorable.
It's just quirky and fun. And I thought it was super cute.
So silly.
Okay, take it away, Lorraine.
Oh, wait, you're not counting down? You always count down?
Well, we're not saying it together.
It's my comfort blanket. Just count down.
Okay, ready? 3, 2, 1, go.
Oh, my darling.
Oh, my darling.
Oh, my darling, Clementine.
Hey, that was pretty good.
Clementine. Clementine.
Little Michael Jackson.
Just crazy runs like Mariah Carey.
Clementine.
We needed a banjo again. Oh, wait. We didn't have a banjo. We had what are those
bagpipes
called? Bagpipes. Yep.
Dang. Yeah, that would be money.
You guys can find me on Instagram at Lauren H. Writes, and you can find our podcast also on Instagram at andhereswhy_pod.
And you can find me at page.hollinsworth, or you can visit the podcast page, and the link to my profile is in the bio.
And same with just wherever you listen to your podcasts, the link is in our link tree, so just click yourself away to happiness. Chad, where can the people find you?
Well, at this present moment in history, you can find me at my house in North Hollywood because I'm quarantined.
Jokes.
But beyond that, you can find me on Instagram at CW Smathers. And if you want to check out your boy's website, it's chadsmathers.com.
And then check out his other website, smuckers.com.
Smuckers.com.
For all your jelly needs.
Yes. Got it all.
We could do jelly on toast, jelly on biscuits. You could put jelly on anything.
You can even smother some jelly all over Chad.
Smother some smuckers.
Just smother the smuckers. Smothered. All over Chad.
Smothered smuckers with smathers.
Anyone in the Los Angeles area, we give you permission to rub jelly on Chad. If you see him walk in the streets, just do it. And post a video.
Yep, I'll be...
That would be a great Instagram challenge.
Yeah, the kids are doing TikTok, so.
Smother smathers.
Oh my God.
Hashtag smother smathers challenge.
Smother smathers with smuckers. That's the challenge.
Wow, that is. Wow. That's a tongue tie right there. I don't know if I can.
It is.
Chad, thank you so much for coming on and talking about one of your faves. It was good having you. So
yeah, so nice meeting you, Chad. Thank you.
Yeah, it was great meeting you. Thanks for having me on. This was a good time.